Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Comic Pop Visits. I'm Richard, along with
Logan here.
And this is brought to you by Comic Pop Library. Tonight, we have a special guest with us. We have Mark Zickfree, and he is the author. That's a surprise. Foreshadowing there. He is the writer and creator, producer, I'm not sure about director, though, of Space Command, a new series coming out through the Kickstarter app. So, Mark, thanks for joining us tonight.
Great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And he's done several other things. You will recognize several of his works. You will recognize several of his friends that join him on his new venture.
Yeah.
He has been part of the Star Trek universe for a while. He's written for The Next Generation, and I believe Deep Space Nine is mixed in there as well.
Yep.
Babylon 5, which is one of my tried and trues that I enjoyed. Sliders back in the day. But one of the ones that really surprised me, because not very many people recognize this, was Forever Night.
Yes.
So my wife and I watched that back in the day, and we enjoyed that to death. So Logan hasn't seen that one yet. But
nope. Well, you did have one of my favorites from middle school, I think it was, that I've wanted to get the other two parts, but it's either not buying anything online or I don't think of it when I'm online to buy stuff. But Magic Time was one of yours, apparently, so that's awesome.
Yes, so that was kind of the foreshadowing. Logan found that and he picked it up and read it and enjoyed it, Mark.
Yeah.
And
he's at least two or three times. But favorite of mine and also.
So we might have to go out and find the rest of them, maybe have you back on just to talk about that one for a trip back in time.
Yeah, it's been.
Sure. We're going to make that a TV show. So that's we're working on. So, yep, we can talk about all of that stuff.
Okay,
you bet.
We'll definitely have to pick those up then. And
yeah, I remember the general premise in a few scenes, but it's been a few years since I last read it, so. Yeah,
that's fine.
But one of the other things with Mark and his wife is working with him as well, Elaine, and they've been involved, nominated for the Hugo Award, which several people will recognize that. Humanities Prize, Nebula Award. He's actually won the Hamptons Prize, so nicely done there. TV Guide Award, which some people will recognize. Some people, I don't know. TV Guide's kind of dropped off a little bit since everything's gone digital, it seems like.
Yeah.
But one of the other ones is Saturn Award. Everybody will recognize that in the sci-fi community, and that is actually his YouTube handle as well, as Mr. Sci-Fi. So if you're going to be going around on the YouTubes, definitely look up his channel, Mr. Sci-Fi, and you'll find all his content there.
Yeah.
But tonight, books. Logan mentioned Magic Time. Mm-hmm. You also have the Twilight Zone Companion.
Yes.
And then the other one that was kind of interesting to me is you worked with Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
Curiosity Cabinet. So that was very interesting. I was like, ooh, that might be something we might have to check out too. I didn't realize he had anything like that out there. But very cool. But what we are here for is Space Command.
Mm-hmm.
And just to let everybody know what it's about, kind of already alluded, it was a Kickstarter program that was brought about because of your love for science fiction. And sadly, this is not a video podcast, or you could see Mark's background and see all the classic sci-fi novels. But tell us about that feeling and how the Kickstarter started and why you kind of went the direction you did.
Absolutely, of course. And the main thing is that, you know, there are three TV shows that made me want to be a writer. The original Star Trek, the original Outer Limits, and the original Twilight Zone. And so I was noticing that there, you know, Star Trek was so hopeful, even though it was done during the Vietnam War, during the Civil Rights Movement, it still said we can build a better future. And we have to reach across boundaries and barriers to do that, you know, and not give in to fear or hatred or any of those things. And so I was noticing that in recent TV shows, that message has kind of been lost. And I wanted to do something that would be sort of that for the modern generation. And so I rather than trusting the networks not to screw it up or cut me off at pilot or cut me off at script, I decided to reach out to my audience. I'd never raised money before, but my audience stepped up, and you know, our initial campaign, we got $221,000, and since then it's been over $1 million, and that allowed me to open my own studio and shoot. We've shot the first 5 hours of Space Command, and we're about to shoot the sixth hour of a 14-hour season. And meantime, we're we're pitching it to Amazon and so forth, but we're not waiting. We're not right. stopping because there's no reason to, because, you know, I'm already reaching millions of people with my work, and it's of the quality I want it to be, because, you know, we live in the 21st century, and that's right. very helpful.
True.
Yes.
And with the Kickstarter program, of course, you deal with the, what do you want to call it? The advanced type stuff, you know, the freebies that you get with the sponsors.
Yeah.
And that has to be a job in and of itself, just handling all that as well.
It is. And because you have to, anything you have to make physically and mail, that mm-hmm. becomes a big deal. And mm-hmm. so more and more of our perks, quote unquote, are digital, so that you can get them immediately, mm-hmm. the soundtrack and the episodes and the radio play and on, you know, the membership card, and you can print it out, you know, so, but we do have a Space Command store where people can buy physical objects like t-shirts and all that kind okay. of stuff, you know, but again, the main thing is making the show, like right. actually, you know, okay. providing the show itself.
So is it, you said you're 5 hours in, roughly,
yeah.
for the other episodes, are you doing other Kickstarters, or is it kind of self
yes.
pertaining?
We've got a Kickstarter going now, and also I sell investment shares of like $7,500 each okay. to, and people buy those, and then they can get a percentage of my producer's net profits, you know, that, and that's allowed us to keep going. I mean, it's we can shoot for a lot less than a studio or a network, you know, which is great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we have another yeah. guest with us.
Yes.
And one of the things also is with the advent of Kickstarter mm-hmm. is actually getting started, where you're yes. kind of in a little bit nicer situation because of everything you've done in the past. So you have yes. that, if you want to say pedigree, that people can say, oh, he's done some unique things and mm-hmm. definitely well-known things. But along that path, you've also met some nice friends.
Yes.
And if you want to, I can mention sure. some of them, or let you mention them, since they're your yeah. friends that you've brought yeah. in that several people will recognize.
Well, it's super fun because I have worked so extensively in TV, I got to work with a lot of great people who then became friends. So because I wrote for Babylon 5 and Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and so forth, so with Space Command, I just would, you know, reach out to my friends and say, hey, you want to be in this? So we have Mira Furlan and Bill Mumy and Bruce Boxleitner from Babylon 5. We've got Armin Shimerman from Deep Space Nine. We've got Robert Picardo from Star Trek Voyager and Stargate Atlantis. We've got Doug Jones from Star Trek Discovery, and in the recent episode, we've got my friend Christina Moses, who stars in A Million Little Things on ABC, and we just shot a scene with Nichelle Nichols from the original Star Trek, you know, and Michael Harney from Project Blue Book and Orange is the New Black, and it just goes on and on. James Hong from Blade Runner and Big Trouble in Little China. I mean, basically everyone I ask says yes. Barbara Bain from Space 1999 and Mission Impossible. Ooh. I mean, all these people who are my heroes, you know, they just step up. Well, George Takei, I'm, you know, we're in conversation to have him, okay. you know, play a role that I've written. So, I mean, you know, it just keeps going. And, yeah. You know, because so many of these actors are so wonderful and people love them and I love them too. And they're so talented. So, mm-hmm. So it's been just a joy.
Now, the way you're going about this, do they give you the friends rate as well, or are they still? Or...
the way we do it is, yes, they're definitely working for less than they would work for if they were working for, like, you know, ABC or CBS. But if Space Command sells, then we'll it'll go up to larger amounts right. for them, for, you know, it'll go up to what they deserve, you know. So,
yeah.
But they're doing Space Command for the love of it. And for the fact that they enjoy working with me and with my wife Elaine, you know.
That's what I was going to say. They have to have an appreciation for it and love for it to actually be
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So that's nice to have that, you know, backing that you're having for yourself and yes. saying, like, oh, they trust me.
Right. And also they know that it's going to get finished. They know that it's not going to be something that just goes off yeah. into smoke and never right. gets done yeah. because, you know, I've created so much work. And even during the pandemic, when, you know, everyone was locked in their own place, we came up with a new 2-hour episode that the actors could shoot their own scenes in their own homes wherever they were. Yeah. So we had actors in Portugal and Saskatchewan and New York and California and Atlanta and so forth, and then we were able to weave it together into this episode, which was very, very different from the other episodes we've done, which are much more standard, you know, science fiction right. television. But it was great fun to see what we could do under these challenges, and that again is on Mr. Sci-Fi. The fans can watch that. They can watch our pilot right on my YouTube channel, right. So they don't have to wait for CBS to roll it out.
And that was going to be one of the other questions too, is how is this going to be distributed? I mean, I know your Kickstarter patrons are going to be getting the series, but how and then you're looking for somebody to sponsor it as well, like Amazon, you said, or possibly somebody, whomever might take it up. But until
the game plan, the game plan is basically I put out the show itself to my audience on my YouTube channel, so they don't have to pay for it. But if the fans want to help support getting it made and also get all the extra stuff, you know, then they can benefit. Like, for instance, we even have walk-on roles. We've got, you know, all sorts of directorial tutorials and things where people can learn, things where people can get my advice in terms of how to build a career. So, but for the episodes, like if you want to watch the first episode, the first hour, it has 900 visual effect shots. That's just right there on Mr. Sci-Fi, as is Ripple Effect, the new episode we just did, because the idea is to gain audience. We have, I mean, over a million people have seen the first episode, and the more fans we get watching it, then we can go to Netflix or Amazon or whomever and say, we've already got our audience, and all you need to do is finance the rest of the show. And so it's sort of a no-brainer. But, you know, that's just, I mean, I it's so much more pleasant to not wait for other people to give you permission, where you can just, you know, because my fans trust me and because my actors trust me, you know, every day is like Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Right. That definitely helps.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's the one show we did. Well, I'm not sure if we actually did a podcast on it, but they did have it on one of the streamers for a week before releasing the episode on YouTube. So that's one way you can do it. But
sometimes
we do send the fans an episode before we release it widely, so they get to have it earlier. And also we send our supporters a downloadable version. So in other words, with Mr. Sci-Fi, they can watch it on YouTube, but unless they're like very savvy with the internet and so forth and can just rip it, you know, from YouTube, you know, but we send the downloadable file to our audience so they can actually download it to whatever they want to watch it on.
Nice.
Along with the Kickstarter, and this has become more and more popular, I don't know if you've done it yet or if you have, possibly, that's the Patreon functionality.
Yeah, I've got a Patreon account, you know, Mark Zickrey at Patreon, but that provides a little bit of money, but certainly not enough to make the show. Really, Kickstarter and selling investment shares is what's really allowed us to, you know, turn the big wheel. But but we have a physical studio. I mean, we literally have a building with sets in it and cameras and sound equipment. I mean, and we have a whole bunch of VFX guys working on generating spaceship shots and stuff. So it's like a real studio in that regard. And even during the pandemic, I was able to keep my editors and my VFX people and my line producer on salary thanks to the support of the fans, you know.
That's nice.
I was very glad of that. Yeah, because, you know, you want to, you know, honor the people you're working with because they're so talented. You don't want them to not be able to pay their gas bill or something, you know.
True. That is true. And with this type of series, have you already pretty much written it out and have the ending and you're just moving forward?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've written most of the first season. I've outlined the rest of it. First novel is completed. The prequel audio play has been completed, and the graphic novel prequel is being drawn. Most of it's been finished. So it's a big story, but unlike Star Trek or the earlier Star Wars comic books and novels, everything in Space Command is canon. So it all is like real and not stories that like, oh, well, that one doesn't count because it was a novel and JJ just throws it away.
Right.
You know, when he Star Wars, you know, and it's like, oh man, but that won't be the case with Space Command, you know, so it's cool.
And you mentioned first season, so if it does well, you're hoping that it will continue on as far as it will go, or
five seasons or however long it goes. Yes. Okay. You know, and again, it's so much fun, and it's such a big, you know, universe. There's so many stories you can do. It's just terrific. And, you know,
you don't have to follow just the characters. You can just choose another set of people if you want to do another season. Yeah.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Well, one of the cool things is because our studio is in LA, like a number of my actors who are on shows, like Doug Jones says, well, how can we do this? How can I be a continuing character? And it's like, well, because the sets are just there and the studio is just there, it's like, oh, whenever you're in town, Doug, we just need you for a day or two on a weekend. We'll pick you up at your place. You know, you can sleep in your own bed, you know, and we just bring you out to the studio and shoot you. And then you can go off and go back to doing Star Trek Discovery or whatever. So we list Doug as a special guest star. But, you know, that's, and they love that because most shows shows are not shot in Los Angeles anymore. They have to go to Atlanta or Vancouver or Toronto or, you know, okay. God knows where.
Right.
You know, be able to, you know, and yeah. And so they love that. And it gives us, like with Mira Furlan or whomever, you know, we can just say, hey, you know, come in for a day and we'll grab some shots or, you know, and because it's a huge tapestry, I know where the story goes and I've written so much of it. You know, it's like, for instance, with Ripple Effect, the one we did during the pandemic, the reason I could write that, I mean, Elaine and I wrote it in a 2-hour script because I knew where all the characters went and I knew who they were and Armin Shimerman and so forth. I mean, I knew what roles they would play. Armin Shimerman, Space Command basically concerns four families over 180 years as we colonize the solar system and jump to the stars. And so we see the characters and then their children, grandchildren, great grandchildren and so forth. So Armin Shimerman plays Robert Picardo's grandson, you know, so that's pretty fun because it's over the generations. And, you know, and we jump back and forth between the generations to see the cause and effect of things happening, how they happen. And and it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Awesome.
And I did notice some of the trailers did show the characters aging. So you kind of
gave
a little bit of foreshadowing on that as well. Saying, like, oh, this is coming down the way.
Yeah. Well, also because it takes longer because of the way we're financed than a normal network show. For instance, Jacob Weddle, who played a little boy in the 2-hour pilot, by the time he got around to doing Ripple Effect, he's now like a teenager. So we can see where his character ends up. So it's almost like the science fiction version of Boyhood, you know? And I joke to him that, you know, if it takes us a couple of years to shoot the one where he's an adult, he can probably play that version of the role as well. You know, it's like, put him in a mustache, you know? And so it's like fun. It's like there's a great quality of playfulness to what we're doing and experimentation. And you try stuff, you see if it works. You know, it's I like that, you know, it's you know, because I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion, I'm very aware of the history of television and how a lot of it is just people being willing to try stuff and to take a swing at something. And, you know, you have to be bold and you can't be terribly afraid of failing, you know, because that'll stop you from, you know, really aiming for the fences.
Okay. And I know the technology you're using is modern day, you know, you're using the computer technology, but as, like I said, you have all these classic sci-fi novels behind you as we're visiting, you can see that influence in all the designs of the ships, especially the, I don't know, I just went blank on the
Paladin,
thank you. And seeing that come about, it really gave me a flashback to what you would see, something similar maybe in a Flash Gordon or a Buck Rogers or something on a classic one.
Yes.
So that was kind of neat to see.
Well, it was fun. My background is in art. I majored in painting, sculpture, and graphic arts at UCLA. So I have a very strong art background and knowledge of the history of art. Mm-hmm. And so I've been a big fan when I was a kid, growing up in the 60s and 70s, a lot of the books I was reading and buying and magazines were used copies from the 50s of Galaxy Magazine or some of these science fiction novels, Heinlein's Juveniles. And I loved that style. And I loved the George Powell movies and, you know, these silver rockets, silver bullet-shaped rockets. And so I thought, well, and when I was coming up with Space Command, I knew it was going to be sort of a tip of the hat to where all the people who influenced me, like Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke and Ray Bradbury, of course, who was a dear friend and mentor. So I thought, well, what can we do to make Space Command look different? Because so many shows look very similar.
Right.
In the design aesthetic. And I thought, well, nobody's done that 1950s kind of science fiction aesthetic in recent years. And I thought that would be great fun to try. And then, of course, Elon Musk comes out with his Starship design, and it's a silver rocket, you know, it's like, you know, with fins, and it's like, wow, I was ahead of my time, you know.
No,
and so he's re-legitimized that design as a rocket ship, and that's totally cool. Nice. So, yeah, so I'm very focused on visual design and trying to have things be kind of fresh and not what we've seen a million times over, you know. So it's great. I love it.
Right. And you that's part of going back to the way past, but this isn't actually something that's in the works today, but it's been theorized, and I don't know how much, if it is even being looked at today, but you use the railgun system to launch.
Yes.
And that's like from the 80s or 90s when that was kind of talked about. So it's kind of neat to see that come back too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was sort of a tip of the hat to when Worlds Collide, a great George Powell film. And also there was a show when I was a kid called Fireball XL5 and that had the rocket taking off up a ramp. And I just thought it'd be fun to do.
Wow.
And you know, and again, you know, sometimes I use very established people as my designers. For instance, Ian McCaig is our character designer. He designed Darth Maul and Queen Amidala and Thanos and Avengers and so forth. But with the alien spaceship, I just had a contest where anyone in the world could design a spaceship. And there's a guy named Nicholas Alanis in Italy, and he won the contest. Wow. And so that's the big EMA ship, this thing that's miles long. That was his design. And I suggested the aesthetic. There's an architect from the turn of the century named Agustin Gaudi, who's very, very famous in Spain. And so I said, well, we're using that design aesthetic for the interior and the exterior of that ship. And then he just ran with it and did a spectacular job. So, and with some of our actors, we even had a worldwide talent search where actors could audition for several lead roles. And we cast our actors from that contest. We got 7,000 inquiries, 1,200 videos for two roles. And we ended up casting about 9 actors from those auditions. And it was great, thrilling.
Part of the work that nobody ever sees, they're going through all that.
Yes, they'll see it in the extras on the, Blu-ray. So.
And we do have, and I'm not, as familiar with some of the newer actors. You do have some fresh faces in there that I have not seen anywhere. But for who becomes Captain Jack Keemer, Ethan McDowell, he's one of the main captains. And then the other captain, I really liked her, Sarah Marafino, who does Lara Essex.
Yeah.
I mean, I really enjoyed her character. That was a fun one.
Yeah. Well, the fun part is that when we had the worldwide talent search, we were having auditions for Captain Kemmer and Lieutenant Bradbury. And Lieutenant Bradbury could either be a male or female role, so women and men could audition for that. But Captain Kemmer was supposed to be a male role. But then Sarah Marafino, who was in New York at the time, decided to audition for that role, even though it was a male role.
Right.
And I was so impressed with that. And I was so impressed with her. I thought, well, I'm going to create a captain of the sister ship to the Paladin and named it the Templar. And I created Captain Laura Essex just for her. And that was really fun. And again, this is where, because I don't need to ask permission of anyone, I didn't need to get an executive at some studio to say yes to that. Right. I could just do it. And that was really fun. And and interestingly enough, Ethan McDowell, who plays Jack Kemmer, Captain Kemmer, when I cast him, he wasn't well known, but subsequently he's been cast in Doom Patrol and he plays one of the lead villains. And so he's gaining a fan base of his own now, which doesn't hurt at all.
So technically you got him first though.
I recognized his possibility.
We actually have Doom Patrol, but we haven't watched that yet, so we'll have to keep an eye out for it.
I think
we
got it at the same time we got Titan, and we've watched that one first. So
that's cool. Which is sadly that might be going away at the DC app. So that's
again, this is where it's great to have my own studio and be doing my own thing, because I don't have to worry about, are they going to cancel it? It's like, I can do this as long as the fans are willing to help me make it happen, and that's really fun.
True. Mm-hmm. That is true. Did you have anything before I go on, or? I'm more the question guy. Logan will have sprinkle them in occasionally.
That's fine.
I got to check with him every so often so I don't walk over him.
Yes.
Sure.
Pretty good from what I remember, but go ahead.
Okay. Some of the things, and Logan might comment about this, but we're going to be a little bit of a nitpick here.
Yeah, there's 2.5 things that were off from my viewing, but that's about it.
There's one that was unique. I don't know if you let Ethan go into the costume design and pick out his own costume. And he was like, this looks cool. But it kind of threw me just a bit. And towards the end of the episode, I kind of got used to it because nobody else has this. Because at first I thought, okay, this is part of the captain's uniform. But then I saw Sarah. And I was like, but that's the sculpted piece for his chest.
Yes.
So I was kind of like, well, it could be armor. They could do it that way. And he's just wants to wear it. So I didn't know, is there going to be a backstory with that?
Or is because it just...
Initially, our costume designer, our costumer wanted, I mean, he did the muscle, the chest plate for Ethan, and he was going to do a similar thing for Sarah. And I just thought it didn't look quite right, and so we didn't go with it for her. Now, later in the show, in Ripple Effect, when Angelique Scott reintroduced her characters as Delaney Chilton, she actually does have that kind of a chest plate on her uniform. So, again, part of this is we learn by doing.
Right.
Yep. So I definitely knew that the lower crew members, the lieutenants and so forth, wouldn't have that.
Right.
But probably in retrospect, I should have had Sarah wear that, but I didn't want to sexualize her. I didn't want it to be too much cheesecake. I wanted her to be a commander in her own right, so that was why I was sort of leaning over in the other direction out of caution, but that was why we did it that way. But I really like Ethan in the uniform the way he has it. And that, of course, as I mentioned, was a design by Ian McCaig. And it was funny because when Ian started designing uniforms for Space Command, it was like much too much like Star Trek The Next Generation. And so I said, I want something that's not Star Trek and I want something that's not Star Wars. I want you to do something I haven't seen before. And that's what he came up with, which I really like because it is distinctive to us.
Mm-hmm. I just think the way those two play off each other, I was expecting her to lean over at some point or maybe sometime in the future, just kind of tap him on the chest and say, you know, you can leave your armor in the closet. That way, you know, the captains can have a choice. They can do it without armor or with armor. But because I figured it was a rank type aspect. Yes. But then when she showed up without it, that kind of, so I was like, okay, maybe it's just the armor.
But I'm really glad that I cast her because, again, I think that she and Jack had a really great chemistry and played really well off each other. And because, you know, I'm married to Elaine and she writes and directs and produces with me, I like strong women characters. I'm married to a strong woman and my mom raised me as a single mom. And so I really like writing strong female characters and I'm not intimidated by them. So, and actors, of course, love, you know, playing their own kind of person, not, you know, like when I met with Mira Furlan to discuss her character when I was asking her to be in Space Command, because I, you know, the last time I'd written for her was in Babylon 5. I said to her, I don't know much about your character yet, but I do know she's a xenoarchaeologist, and she has a loving but very fiery relationship with her daughter, very stormy relationship, and she's not defined by a man. And she said, I'm in.
You know, there you go.
Great. And so that was really fun. That was really fun. You know, and they're just sort of willing, the actors love the way we're writing the characters. They love playing those characters, you know, and then we just, and in some case I've sort of told them some of where the characters go.
Okay.
I think that's fine because they really love it. They really love it.
And then there was one cheesecake moment, but it was an intentional cheesecake moment.
Yes.
And that's the captain, you know, Captain Kimmer again, his speech to the crew for the very first time. And at first, Logan and I was like, oh my gosh, where are we going with this? But then you start seeing the crew's reaction or the bridge crew's reaction. You're like, okay, they're rolling their eyes too. And they're you're left with two interpretations with how Kimmer's doing this. It's like he was actually being serious, but then he saw the reactions and he changed real fast. Or from the start, he was being just kind of off center of what a captain would be like. And so the viewer could see it either way.
Sure. Well, here's my thought about that scene. You know, in so many science fiction things, it's the cliche of the Henry V speech. It's a speech from Shakespeare where Henry V rallies the troops before the battle. And you see that in Independence Day, you know, today will be our Independence Day. And it's that scene where they give the speech and everyone applauds. And it's a real cliche now because you see it a million times. Yeah. So the idea that Elaine and I had was, let's have him give what we think at first is going to be the inspiring speech, but then it's going to turn out to be like, is this guy out of his mind? Yeah. So it's a joke because what he's actually doing is he wants his crew to know that he can laugh at himself, that he's a guy who he's doing that to let them know that they can be themselves, they can come to him with problems. This is not going to be some guy who's so full of himself that he can't laugh at himself. And so he's doing that to basically say, I'm an okay guy and we can all be relaxed here if we do our jobs right. And, you know, and that's fine. And you can see that they get that he gets the joke. Because at first they're like, oh my God, who is this guy? What you have to do? And so, but that allows them to just kind of know that he's a good guy and that they're going to be able to really, really take this journey with him because it's, you know, they want, you know, he wants their loyalty and allegiance, but he doesn't need that to get that out of fear or out of, you know, pulling rank when he can just be, this is who I am and I'm the best there is at this. And so he'll be in good hands. You know, he takes care of his people,
you know.
But it's fun. It's fun. It was a risk. Yeah. That scene was definitely a risk.
Like I said, well, as you got further into it, you started realizing what was happening. But at the very first, you're kind of like, okay.
I agree. So. You're on a little bit of thin ice in that scene. Absolutely.
And we don't want to give too much away for people that haven't seen it, but of course you have the villain being introduced because one of the other sections that Logan kind of caught and we debated a little bit about where's the timeline with this. And that was the introduction of your villain with Robert Picardo's character and their shift to Mars from where they were at. And we were kind of
they didn't mention how they were going to go to Mars soon, but
how they get there. Yeah.
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 So we didn't know what the time shift was. But it's one of those where we kind of, my wife affectionately, and I sometimes call it this too, and I'm sure everybody else does, it's the movie magic moment where it's not quite clear, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to refer to Doug as the villain, because the question really is he the villain? True. As we get into the second part, you get to see if he's on the right side or the wrong side of the equation. And Jack, Captain Kemmerer, having gotten his orders, has to decide if he's on the right side of the equation or not. So it becomes a very interesting morality tale in that way. Yeah. And my idea was, this is a story about people who help each other, who save each other, who complete each other. So, for instance, at the beginning, Jack disobeys orders to save Mira and her daughter. Bob Picardo takes pity on Doug Jones, who's going to be thrown on the fire because he's a damaged synthetic. And Bob takes pity on him and says, well, I think I can repair this one. And and then Doug, of course, says, well, having repaired me, they were just going to throw me out. So maybe we should just exit stage left and no one will notice, that kind of thing. And, it's about people coming to care about each other. And because, again, that whole notion of a hopeful future is where we don't give in to fear and hate when we do reach out with compassion. I feel that very strongly. It's just the same message that was in the original Star Trek, which is, we have to be better. And that's an action rather than, and we have to accept, all sorts of people who initially might seem different from us, but aren't really when we get into what their heart is, And I define heroes as people who are kind and villains as people who aren't, I mean, it's a pretty easy dividing line.
Right.
Before the whole thing, it was, okay, is this guy going to be turning out like Spock or Khan for that guy?
Exactly. But one idea I also have with him is, because he's a synthetic human, he can kind of look at humanity from a little bit of a distance, a little bit of a remove. And that's, so he can sort of be our commentator on how odd humanity is and how self-destructive and whatever. But it's just fun. And having Doug Jones and Bob Picardo in scenes together is just so great. They're both terrific. It's just a joy.
We've seen Robert Picardo in several other things, and he really likes to dip his toes into the really, really independent films. So we've seen him in some movies where but it's like, but he chews up the scenery when he's in it. I mean, he's a really great actor. At least I enjoy him when he's in stuff.
I love working with him. And definitely we're going to be working with him a lot more, absolutely, in the days to come.
Nice. And then, of course, you mentioned, is it Mara? Is that her first name?
Mira.
You mentioned her, Ferlin. She's, of course, from Babylon 5, which I remember watching.
Yeah.
And then you also bring about some others. You mentioned Bruce Boxleitner. But the one person, I can't remember if you mentioned him or not, but this one's a pretty prominent role, at least for this first couple of episodes, and that's Bill Mumy, who is involved with these synthetic humans. So him in the hairstyle that he has, I was just like, whoa. I was like,
that was his hair. And the fun part is that I've known Bill since I was 7 years old, because before Star Trek there was a show, the original Lost in Space, and he played Will Robinson. And because I mentioned I was raised by a single mother, so one day I was home sick with a cold, and I was a latchkey kid, so I was just home alone. Mm-hmm. And I was a big fan of Lost in Space, so I was in my pajamas, and I thought, well, it'd be fun to call the stars of Lost in Space. So they used to give these big, thick phone directories that would have everyone in the city's number listed in it who had a listed number. So I started calling the people with the names of those actors. And for the most part, it was all people who had the same name but weren't those actors. Right. But there was one Mooney in the phone book, and it must have been his dad, because I dialed that number and I said, is Billy there? And his mom said, well, hold on. And then Billy Mooney came to the phone, and I was so nervous. All I could say was, will you be my friend, and hang up. But then I called him back. And as soon as I was over my cold, my mom took me to his house and we traded comic books. Photo of him as Will Robinson that he signed to me when I was 7. And then, of course, we met again when I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion, because he was in 3 great episodes of The Twilight Zone. Yeah. So I interviewed him about that. And then we worked together on Babylon 5. And I'd always wanted to work with him again. And so I wrote the role. I mean, all these roles that these actors play, I wrote for them specifically. I knew who was going to be in it, and I cast them in those roles. So, and then as I meet other actors like J.G. Hertzler or, I'll meet new actors and I'll figure out where to put them in Space Command, okay. Like Barbara Bain, you know, is another one.
Okay. I just remember, usually he's always clean cut in most of his roles. And then to see him with his hairstyle, and I'll let other people discover his style when they watch. Yeah. But it was like, that's an interesting choice. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. And he was great. I mean, he was really great. And he represents television history. I mean, he was there, you know, I mean, he was there as a little kid. I mean, he's been an actor from such a young age that he told me that when he was young, before he could read, his mother would read the lines to him so he could memorize them. So when he would go to the table read, he would know not only his lines, but he would have memorized all the lines by all the actors. So when they were doing a table read on Twilight Zone, Cloris Leachman blew her line and he told her what the line was. And she was a little bit offended to be corrected by like a 7-year-old, you know, but so he was quite something. He's an amazing guy. I love working with him.
Very cool. It's neat that you were able to connect with him at such a young age, though. Yeah. That was really unique. I mean, and to keep that friendship.
So, yes.
And I love that aspect of trading comics. I'm a comic book reader, and Logan is too. So we're we're a comic book family. So
yes, absolutely.
So we'll have to get the link where we can purchase the graphic novel or something. So
you'll like it. It's really cool.
And the other thing I want to mention as well is we've mentioned the effects. Of course, all of the effects without us pesky humans in them are always tremendous, but you're working with the effects and blue screen, and there are some of those in the very first episode that it's little, you can kind of tell, okay, this is an effect, but a lot of the background as it progresses on, it's like they're refining as they go, and that's pretty much normal for a series on doing that. So it's nice to see there, you don't see a big, you know, it's a little fuzzy at the very beginning, but as it goes on, it gets just sharper and sharper and sharper and sharper.
True.
Yeah, but it's great. And sometimes the fans think something's a green screen that isn't. For instance, the Paladin Bridge, that's a real set. We built that, and the Paladin Corridor, we built that. And the cave, every scene in a cave, we have a cave set. Right. And there's a scene in Jack's parents' house. That's real. And you know, it's funny because the driving scene, people complain about the driving scene. The reason I kept it was more, my dad built that car, the Bugatti, and I wanted to keep it in there. I easily could have made it a different kind of car exterior and not have it be open cockpit like it is. Right. And then it would have been much more plausible. But I just out of my own affection for that car and for the memory of my dad, I kept it in. And that's just a personal thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't see any problem with the plausibility of the card. The weird thing was the interaction with the background and the people. But
And that's always been an issue with car scenes is the background. Sometimes it's just a hard one to do.
In future, we'll just put small cameras on a real car moving through the world. Yeah, you know? we're actually building a futuristic car for space. We're working on that right now. It's going to be a full-size car that can be driven, and it's going to look amazing. Okay. So that's another fun thing, and that's where I can just say to my team, "Hey, we're gonna build a futuristic car," and they kind of look at me like I'm insane, and then they
we do it.
They get in line. Yeah, exactly.
And if it actually works after the whole thing is done,
Well, I mean, this is like
not too many wrecks.
But the thing is, when I was a kid, I got a Christmas present of a trip to the original Star Trek set. I was there for the filming of the last episode of the original Star Trek, Turnabout Intruder. Okay. And to be on the bridge of the Enterprise and to sit in the captain's chair and to stand on the transporter and all of those things, it was a dream come true. And so now, as an adult, to have my own spaceship sets and right now we're building an alien ship. I mean, it's a kid's dream come true. And the fact that I can say, hey, let's build some spacesuits or let's build an 8-foot-tall creature. I mean, here's the, I'll show you this while you're on audio, but this is the head of a creature we're building. And that's the concept head. But again, it's going to be an 8-foot-tall creature. Okay. And we're making two of those right now. So, you know, it's like I can do anything anything pull off I can do. And so that's
I've always enjoyed the practical mixed with the digital. When they try to go completely digital, I'm used to it to a degree, but at the same time, I'm still of the old school where I do like the mixture better than just leaning heavily one way.
Yes, I agree because I mean, it's interesting because I just saw Greyhound, which is the new Tom Hanks movie, mm-hmm. you know, where he plays a commander of a destroyer. And it's about the Nazi wolf pack, the U-boats right. hunting this convoy. And I liked the film very much, but all of the stuff with the ships is CG. And you get mm-hmm. a sense of that. And there's a point where you feel almost like you're watching a video game yeah. because none of it has that real reality yeah. of if it were real ships, you know. So that, yeah, I understand. Absolutely. I agree.
The newer generations will probably be saying, no, you're... I won't say we're old because I'm not old yet. No.
I was perfectly fine with PS2 era graphics and I would still watch it. So. If the story is good enough to cover for it, then it is good enough to cover for it. Yeah. So.
Story's always the main thing. Yeah. I mean, yes. You can always work around everything, but story, you got to have that nailed.
Yeah, well, that's why we have the script. We make sure the script yeah. is nailed before we start shooting it. Because again, it's all about, do the characters work? Does the story mm-hmm. work? Because all of the effects, all of that stuff, we've all seen a million movies and TV shows that have great effects and lousy stories. Mm-hmm. you know, then you don't care about it because you don't care about yeah. the people. Yeah. And with science fiction, the characters are so very important. If you don't care about yeah. Kirk and Spock and McCoy or... Mm-hmm. whoever your favorite TV show or movie is, yeah. you know, Deckard and Blade Runner, whatever, you're not going to take the journey. You know, you just won't. And so because I come out of television, I know that it's about the characters. Right. And if that works, then the show will work. People will be very forgiving of everything else as long as right. the meat works. You bet.
True. And one other thing before we start wrapping up is another character that I enjoy, Logan enjoys, and to a degree, probably it's more than usual. Maybe I'm wrong, but my wife, she's like, no. But it's the soundtrack. It's the music. And David Reichlin.
Reichlin.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, in this, what I'm basically calling the Space Command theme, and that's what we opened up yeah. on, was coming in with yeah. that. And that has that old feel, and it yeah. has that build up. And I know we don't do the whole thing because when you go into the patrons, we kind of trail it off at that point and we'll end it. But it kind of reverbs through where you're thinking and all yeah. your Kickstarters, supporters. Yeah. But that feel of the building, and it's something and about an adventure-ish sound to it as yeah. well, like the old serial type things, like the Flash Gordons yes. again and stuff like that. So yeah. that was really, and most people forget that that's a character of the movie too, and I enjoyed the yeah. music as well.
Well, I'm sure David will be very glad to hear that, because again, the trick with Space Command is this is a show that we're doing now that's speaking to the real world, that's speaking mm-hmm. to everything we're living through now. It's mm-hmm. not tongue-in-cheek, it's not, you know, a comedy right. at all, but it has to have that little tip of the hat to all the history of science fiction, you know, in film and TV and books. And that's why I named all the officers on the Paladin after famous science fiction writers. But, yep. but with David, when we talked about the score, it was like, this should have a little bit of the old fashioned quality of rip-roaring adventure, but also it has to be modern as well. And so finding that real mm-hmm. fine line is really important. And I think David's wow. very happy with music, as am I. It's great fun to hear.
Yeah. And Logan and I, like I said, we enjoy the soundtracks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we enjoy the lyrical songs as well, but we also, like, to my yeah. wife's chagrin, we like the soundtrack. So whenever we listen to them, she's like, when is this going to be over? But yeah. I don't know. Once you get immersed in it,
that's
yes.
it's just part of it. And it brings back memories, not just of necessarily yes. the show, but yes. of what you went through in life at that time yes. and enjoying yeah. it. So.
Yes. So, yes. It really, I feel exactly the same way. And again, that's where television is such a wonderful medium, because mm-hmm. it combines acting and visual design and music. It's like yeah. all the arts in one, yeah. you know, and that's one of the reasons I love it so much. And also you reach a huge audience, you know, and your work lasts, because, I mean, think about it. Here's the original Star Trek from 1966. Wow. I mean, how many TV shows from 1966 are still valid, are still being yeah. watched? You yeah. know, I mean, there's, you know, some people are probably watching Bonanza or Mannix or whatever, but that they're not having big conventions. They're not thinking, oh boy, I can't wait to see Mannix, the new version of Mannix. No. But Star science fiction just has a longevity that makes it a wonderful genre to work yeah. in. I mean, I mm-hmm. you know, I've always loved science fiction from when I was a little kid, and I'm really glad I'm working in this medium as opposed to okay. you know, romance novels or something.
Right. Yeah. Well, we read a little bit of everything, so
that's good.
Did you have a comment that you were going to do?
Oh, the bit about soundtracks, that's part of what can annoy you about Netflix or Hulu or whatever. They'll cut yes. out the credits as they're getting yeah. into the nice little soundtrack bits, and it's just so much annoying.
I know. I wish there, hopefully there's some way to turn off that feature, but I hate the fact they cut away from the end credits and all of that. It just, you know. And so, yeah. And again, we live in such a different time from when I grew up, when there were only three networks. And if you wanted to see a TV show or a movie, you had to be there when they were airing it, because there was no way to record it. And that was really quite something. So I remember when the original Star Trek came out, I recorded it on reel-to-reel audio tape in case it never showed again. Right. Okay, that was 10 years old when Star Trek debuted. And you know, and fortunately, by the time the Twilight Zone Companion, but I wrote that book in my early 20s, by then VCRs were starting to come in, and so it just, but Twilight Zone wasn't available commercially on video. So again, I recorded those shows on audio cassette just so I could kind of get the details right. And it was, I really love the technology we have now between VOD platforms and all, and being able to talk on Zoom and you name it. I mean, it's we live in a different time.
Definitely a different time as well. Yeah. It's what's going to be the next 20, 40 years is going to be wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, we're kind of running up on time like we usually do. We always enjoy visiting, so we always but I want to give you a chance to mention any of the social medias. We kind of already mentioned your YouTube, Mr. Sci-Fi. Definitely want everybody to check that out. But any other avenues, whether it's the Kickstarter or something
you
that anybody can connect with you with social media?
I think we've actually said the name of your Kickstarter.
So my Mr. Sci-Fi channel on YouTube is my main portal of entry. And if you go there, you can click on the Kickstarter campaign and it'll take you right to the Kickstarter campaign. We've got another 30 days or so, and we've got to raise, you know, about 30 grand or so.
Okay.
So, you know, that would be enormously helpful if people pledge to Space Command. It keeps it going. And if anyone wants to buy shares, investment shares in Space Command, they can reach me at markzikri@gmail.com. And in addition to that, I'm on Facebook as Mark Zikri. I'm on Twitter as @MarkZikri. I just started that the other one, whatever it's called.
Don't ask me.
The new one that it's, you post it from your phone and God knows, but I'm on that too. Instagram. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just learning how to use that sucker. I mean, those are the main ways to reach me, but definitely, you know, I'm reachable. And subscribing to Mr. Sci-Fi, I post not just about Space Command, but I'll review movies and TV shows and books.
Nice.
And every now and then I'll air some old show I wrote that isn't around much anymore. You don't get to see it. So I'll just put it on Mr. Sci-Fi and say, hey, I wrote this, and talk about it a little bit, and then show the episode.
Cool.
And that's really fun too. I love YouTube. I mean, there's just so much cool stuff there, you know? So those are all the ways to get me. And we're going to be making a lot more Space Command and a lot more of other shows too that we're doing. So Magic Time is definitely on the front burner.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll have to
grab those and reread them, and then get back in touch with you and see if you just want to visit about the books and give you a precursor to what's coming. Who knows? So we'll have to look for those and get back in touch with you and see what we can do.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great fun.
Because the first book's somewhere in our boxes of books that we've yet to unpack into the house because we moved.
We're still in the unpacking stages of a move.
Yes.
So.
we also just did an audio play of Magic Time that's available at Audible, and it stars Christina Moses from A Million Little Things and Armin Shimerman from Deep Space Nine and Buffy. So it's really fun. It's the full story. We wrote a TV pilot of Magic Time, and it tells that same story. So I really love it.
Okay, cool. Have everybody check that out then.
Yeah.
So. We're going to say goodbye for this evening. If you're willing, we would love to have you back on, though, Mark, at some point.
Of course, anytime.
I'm not going to say tomorrow night, because let's do it again.
I'm basically only available Sundays anyway.
Logan's on a six-day work week, so.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Of course, you've probably put in 24 hours sometimes or more. So.
Yeah, people often ask me when I sleep, but again, when you love what you're doing, it's just joy. I mean, it really is like every day is Christmas.
True.
And you come up with things, and all of a sudden you've got this whole team of people helping you make it real. I love that. I love taking something from my brain and sharing it with the whole world. It's a great honor.
We're going to stop here with Mark and hopefully have him back on and discuss some of his other projects. Mm-hmm. But again, tonight's was basically an all Well, we did sidetrack a little bit, but pretty much all about Space Command, yeah. His Kickstarter program, that is series that is actually out there. The first episode is out there on YouTube under his Mr. Sci-Fi YouTube channel. So go out there and look at that. That'll have the links to the Kickstarters where you can help him finish up that endeavor. It's a very fun series. Anybody that's into the sci-fi arena will definitely love it. If you have a father or mother that has kind of strayed away from a little bit because they can't get into the new stuff, this might be an avenue for them to get back into the sci-fi slant, because it definitely harkens to the older age, but also keeps it modern, which is great for all audiences. So definitely look up Space Command under Mr. Sci-Fi on YouTube. And Mark, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight. It's been a blast. You've been great.
Yeah, it's been great fun. I've really enjoyed it, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Mm-hmm. We're going to be leaving Out on Adventure by Matthew Parker. All of the links will be in the show notes and the reference notes. So be sure, if you like his adventure song, be sure to look up Matthew Parker and find some of his digital downloads of your vendor of choice. He'd appreciate that support. But we've been having fun visiting with Mark Zekri, Logan, and I. Just been a blast.
Yep.
Hopefully everybody out there has been enjoying this as much as we have. We'll see everybody on the flip side. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
I never dreamed that you would change my world forever. But here we are, I'm ready to conquer. Ready to fight injustice like I'm fighting monsters. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. Just call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Live. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.